that seems to be a big question in our political discourse these days, nationally.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, a New York State senator gets ready for the new session and possibly a trip to Washington. Well, with the new legislative session underway in Albany, Republican New York State Senator Dan Steck of the 45th District is outlining his priorities for the year, but he's also keeping a close eye on the looming special election in New York's 21st House District, long held by Republican Elise Stefanik, who's on her way to the UN. Steck sat down with our North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley to talk about his priorities for the year and how he's getting ready to run in the special race.
People are first and foremost concerned with affordability. Now, and certainly Albany has an impact on some of that, obviously through taxation, through things that we spend. The federal government has more monetary policy. They move the inflation needle a lot more than Albany does. But, you know, how Albany spends money, how much our budget is, you know, those are areas, things that we mandate and regulate, you know, direction we're going in energy policy hasn't necessarily had the impact it's going to yet, but that's coming. But people are very concerned about affordability. Outside of that, you know, our education is a large part of our budget, and it seems like that dominates a lot of the discussion. Maybe not individual voters, but, you know, all the schools and the school districts in this past year, when Governor Hochul, you know, wanted to fundamentally change foundation aid and get rid of Hold Harmless. You know, that was something that hit the North Country particularly hard, rural school districts certainly hard. Half of my 48 districts would have lost money due to that change in formula. She backed off of that, but, you know, it's still on the table as far as for discussion. So, you know, I'm sure that coming up, that's going to continue to be another issue. But then infrastructure, you know, cell service, broadband is better than before. You know, I mean, I don't want to say, oh, we haven't done anything. Or I won't even say we haven't done a good job, but it's not done, and there are still people that are frustrated by the lack of service. And so I continue to focus on that because I do know that the closer we get to getting that done, other leaders in Albany will start to pivot to other issues, and there are other issues. So I'm trying to push this while there's still focus on it, but cellular service and broadband are certainly, and infrastructure, roads and bridges, again, not sexy stuff. But, you know, those are the things that affect all of us, and those are the things that I hear about from people.
So about a week after the session starts on mm-hmm. the 8th, you'll mm-hmm. hear the governor's budget address. Mm-hmm. What do you anticipate versus what you would like to hear and have in that budget?
So, you know, in the last year, certainly since session ended in June, I think the governor has had you know, a rough go with members of her own party and some issues going on in New York City. You know, and I think that some financial realities are starting to come home to Albany. So she's going to have an interesting tightrope, I think, to walk where, you know, the fiscally responsible direction to go is going to be met with resistance from the majorities, you know, and of her own party, predominantly from New York City, pushing her to spend more. I also think, and again, the budget presentation will spill over to other non-financial matters. There has been and there will continue to be the talk of Trump-proofing. You know, it seems like a lot of blue states and blue cities are obsessed with Trump-proofing themselves. I'm not sure I understand 100% what that means. I got an idea, having been in Albany, that, you know, this is going to translate to, crime policy, illegal immigration, you know, and sanctuary city policies. We're going to continue to see that. Although, you know, there's been some tragedy in New York City on the subway involving illegal migrants. And, you know, I mean, most recently a woman that was burned alive in the subway system by somebody that was here illegally. It'll be an interesting debate. And I think that Governor Hochul is going to try to – She will be more to the center than I think her two majorities in the Senate and the Assembly will be. You know, I mean, my conference, you know, we've got positions staked out on a lot of this stuff, too. And, you know, we'll welcome a partnership if the governor wants to see things our way or if we can help each other and making sure that we correct this course that we're on. But I suspect that, you know, a lot of resistance to any moderation of fiscal policy or sanctuary state policies is going to be opposed by the Democratic majorities.
Do you see the Republicans having any sort of inroads into any sort of crack in the Democratic majority?
Well, so the in the Assembly, the House or the Assembly Republicans lost one seat in the election, and in the Senate we gained one. So it was more or less the status quo. I mean, if you're going to look at the election, you'll also see that President Trump did better than he had previously, or better than any other recent Republican presidential candidates. So I think Republicans have made progress, particularly in New York City. Our new member in the state Senate is a Senator Steve Chan, and he's from New York City. He's a Marine Corps veteran, nice guy, but, you know, he's from one of the five boroughs. And, you know, so I think that we've made inroads there. But, you know, certainly there's inroads and then there's wins, you know, and we need to make some wins. I do think, though, that with the incoming Trump administration and, you know, Senate and House in Republican control, that that puts Republicans, I think, in a better position, that we do have federal partners backing us up on you know, their agenda, but, you know, certainly their agenda that we would support or, you know, argue for here. So, you know, while we may not have the leverage ourselves, having, you know, President Trump saying, hey, this is what I'm doing with immigration, this is what's going to happen, whether you like it or not. I mean, I hope it doesn't come to that. But, you know, he's got strings and levers that he can pull that I think will help Republicans in Albany, you know, fight for what we think is, you know, a moderation in some of the policies that we've seen lately.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of your criticisms are fiscal, things like Governor Hochul's plan to send $500 refund checks to.
Yeah. I mean, that's a gimmick, you know. I mean, that's politics, and that's a gimmick, and the cost of doing that, you know, is just, you know, I mean, individual checks, and I mean, just how about we just cut some spending somewhere? You know, I mean, you know, there's other ways to do this. That this is a campaign gimmick. But, you know, she's already looking to 2 years from now. And on the one hand, she's got to worry about a Republican opponent. But she also, frankly, has to worry about a challenge from the left.
But that's typical.
I mean,
everybody is looking 2 years out almost as soon as they're in office.
So. Two years goes by so fast. It sure does.
One of the other things, you wrote to NYSERDA asking for the true cost of implementing the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. Right. For people who are not familiar with that, that's the Greenhouse Gas Emissions Reduction Law. Mm-hmm. You cited an Empire Center report saying that it will cost between $280 and $340 billion. Mm-hmm. Is the cost the only concern that you have about that law?
Well, I mean, certainly, again, you know, you led with questions about what am I hearing out there. People are concerned about the cost of energy. You know, the Public Service Commission is considering rate increases for National Grid. And, you know, these are preliminary moves that National Grid is doing. This is the tip of the iceberg stuff as far as what they're going to be asking from the Public Service Commission. And the public's already reacting to that. So, you know, affordability and the, you know, the cost versus benefit and what is the atmosphere gained by our energy law versus what does our individual ratepayer, taxpayer, the health of the state suffer? But, you know, regardless of whether my skepticism is warranted or not, the state of New York ought to be able to answer a simple question: what is the price tag on this? And this is, I've asked at each of the last 2 years in the budget hearings. I will sit there and I will get my turn to ask 3 minutes worth of questions. And you know how I talk, right? So that's like 60-second intro. And then, you know, maybe 2 minutes, a minute of a question. And then I got to let the person answer. And that's how our hearings work. But I've asked the Public Service Commission at those budget hearings each of the last 2 years about that Empire report and that estimate. And what, you know, what is your estimate? And the answer I get from them is, well, we don't have a precise dollar amount, but the cost of doing nothing is greater. Next time they pull, well, first of all, I wrote them a letter saying I'm tired of that answer. I'm telling you now in November that I'm asking this question in February, so be ready for it. I mean, that was the gist of the letter that I sent them. I worded it nicely like that, but the plain read of that is stop hand-waving and give me a real number, and I'm going to give you a 3 months head start on it. But if I get that answer, well, the cost of doing nothing, I'm going to stop them. I'm going to say, that implies that you know what those two numbers are. Because if you're going to say one is greater than the other, then you must know what those numbers are. But at the end of the day, you know, we're 4% of total carbon emissions, New York State is. If we went cold turkey and didn't emit any more carbon, we don't move the needle on the atmospheric composition. You know, my colleagues on the other side will quickly say, well, but we're going to do the right thing. We're going to lead. Pennsylvania and Ohio don't care what New York's energy policy is. And if they don't, I guarantee you Russia, China, and India don't either. So, again, I'm not saying bah humbug on the environment. I'm a son of a forest ranger. I'm a 46er. I got a child on this planet, as many of us do. I care about, you know, being a good steward to the land. I don't want to be wasteful. I don't want rivers on fire. And, you know, I mean, all those messages that I grew up with seeing on television, the public service, none of us want that. But what I want is an honest conversation and an assessment. What are we doing? What is it going to cost? And what do we gain if we spend that? And right now, from what I've seen, I don't think that the benefits override the cost. But and if I'm wrong, prove to me that I'm wrong. Don't just lecture me and saying, well, I'm doing right by the planet. You know, the voters and the people that are paying the bill deserve a better answer. And so I do have legislation that would mandate that they have to come up with a cost analysis. And it would also delay the implementation 10 years. Because frankly, from everything that I've read from Comptroller DiNapoli's report to other independent reports, we are way behind on the timeline. So there's no way we're going to make the timelines on the CLCPA. That's human nature. That's the nature of bureaucracy. Driving up here to Plattsburgh, I get on the Northway at exit 20, and that hill between exit 22 and 23 going up between Lake George and Warrensburg, you're smiling. You know exactly what I'm talking about. That it took a year to rebuild those overpasses. That's one pair of overpasses on the interstate. It took a year to do it, and it was a traffic disaster. What makes the people think that the state of New York is going to completely redo the electric grid and the electric charging for buses and all that? Maybe with enough time, but not on the timelines where we're going to be in a position where all new construction is going to be electric only in the next couple of years. We're not there. And so, until they're realistic and honest with what can we do and what can't we do, what can we and can't we afford, and what do we really gain as a planet in doing this? I'm not opposed because it's an idea from the left. I'm looking at this as an engineer, as somebody that's got an energy background, and I just somebody that lives on the planet and sees, I know the nature of state bureaucracy. We don't do anything quickly, you know, and except maybe get ourselves into trouble. But, we need to be honest with these costs. And that's been my plea to the Public Service Commission.
Talking about other costs. One of the things I'm curious about is you've been opposed to congestion pricing, but that's down in New York City. Your mm-hmm. district doesn't
sure.
apply really to congestion pricing. So why are you so outspoken about it?
Well, it's a tax. It's a tax on working people, on the working class. It is a boondoggle. It will be crushing to people there. I mean, my colleagues from New York City get an awful lot of say so on Adirondack Park issues too, don't they? And again, this isn't a tit for tat here. This is my responsibility is statewide. Of course, it's not a local issue for me, but I'm being asked, do I see value in raising this tax in order to promote what? Fewer cars entering New York City? And will that money be well spent? The MTA is a black hole. And it's a waste of money. And a lot of state resources are going into the MTA. And if there's state resources going into the MTA, guess where they're not coming? They're not coming to broadband itself in the North Country. They're not coming to fix that overpass on the Northway between Lake George and Warrensburg that I like to talk about all the time. This is money that isn't being well spent. It's not being well audited or cared for. The MTA is a disaster. But this is going to be a crippling tax, a very regressive tax on the working person that's trying to commute in and out of the city.
Dan Stack, you talked about a bill that you're planning to put forward requiring the cost analysis.
Well, it's in already. Okay. I don't have the bill number memorized, but I do. It's in already. It's been in.
What other bills are you planning to introduce, reintroduce, or sponsor in the upcoming session?
Yep, certainly. Representing six counties, 84 towns, 20 villages, and two cities, there's always a routine. This is the time of year where we're collecting those bill requests. One that's new and very relevant here is the town of Plattsburgh. Supervisor Michael Cashman, his town board, has asked for an occupancy tax bill that requires state legislative approval. So Assemblyman Jones and I and Michael Cashman had a conversation a couple weeks about that, and we will be carrying that bill. That's a new – but, there's a lot of the routine, extenders for various property taxes, mortgage tax, sales tax kind of thing. The main thrust, I think, of the legislative session always falls around the budget and, what is and isn't in the budget. And so it might not be, sometimes individual bills get rolled into. I got another bill that we're continuing to struggle with getting passed, but it'll likely, if it happens, it'll be part of the budget. Boquette Valley Schools, so they voted to merge a few years ago, and they were going to build a new building. There was some sort of confusion somewhere between the school and state ed department and their consultants as to what was and wasn't aidable by the state for the new building. We are trying to help them figure that out, and really what this is going to translate to is additional funds for the school to build the building that they are looking to build. So that's a bill that I've put in. I will put that in again, but that's also something that we're trying to work into the budget conversation. So we've been talking to state ed and the Department of Budget on that. But those are probably the two of the more significant local bills that we'll be working on.
Dan Steck, most of what we've been talking about is the upcoming legislative mm-hmm. session. But obviously, New York 21 mm-hmm. is looming as a potential special election. Mm-hmm. We have to wait for Congresswoman Stefanik to resign,
right,
if she is approved by Congress mm-hmm. to be ambassador to the UN. Mm-hmm. So if that special election moves forward, you have said now that you are one of the candidates approaching the GOP county chairs who will select the candidate. There's not a primary in this case. Since you formally announced that basically in the last few days, mm-hmm. There's been some criticism. Candidate Anthony Constantino, I think is how you pronounce his name, was on X, kind of ripping you for refusing to endorse Donald Trump. But yet I've heard you say on Fox and Friends that, mm-hmm. no, you do support Donald Trump. What do you make of, this do you or don't you support Donald Trump?
Yeah, that seems to be a big question in our political discourse these days nationally. To that, though, and he's referring to 2016. In October 2016, Post-Star reporter asked Senator Little and I if we were going to endorse, and asked both of us together, and we both said no, we weren't going to endorse. And there was a newspaper article. 12 days later, same reporter did another story. He asked us the same similar question, and we both said that, or I said that I would support and was voting for Donald Trump. So this is all pre-election 2016. Now, there's a lot of water under the bridge since 2016. Why somebody that wants to run for this office is going to try to point to as a litmus test something that's more than 8 years old? And after watching him do, in my opinion, a good job in his first term as president, watching an awful lot of everything in the kitchen sink thrown at him to trip him up, from impeachments to indictments to trying to bankrupt him in civil trials and, just stuff that I think was ridiculous and way beyond the pale. I mean, it's one thing to question authority or to push back on the other side. It's quite something else to, to turn the powers of the Justice Department against an individual. The bottom line is I've supported him ever since October 2016. I hesitated at the time, but I did vote for him three times. And, I think that this is something that people that are looking to forward themselves as a candidate, you know, they're going to look to criticize others. I get a lot of criticism that I'm maybe too Republican and too MAGA. I mean, I have 100% conservative party rating, and I have an A+ rating from the National Rifle Association. I am a right of center guy. I didn't build a monument to somebody on top of a building that I own. But, I've been doing this for a while now. This is I just finished my 12th year in the state legislature. The voters know me. The media knows me. I know, certainly my Senate district, all of which resides in New York 21, very well. I was born and raised and college educated in the district. The 8 years that I served on active duty in the United States Navy, I've lived in the district my whole life, so I know it. It knows me. It's had a chance to vet me. It's had a chance to kick me out of office 14 times I've run and 14 times I've won. So, I'm a known quantity. I have a rock solid voting record, and it's very public. You don't have to guess where I am on issues. You can go and see how I voted on issues. There's a lot of issues in Albany that are very relevant in Washington, D.C. I'm 100% on board with America First. I think that we shouldn't ever have to apologize to anyone for controlling our border or pursuing our own national interests or defending ourselves or standing up with our allies. I think we do need more veterans in Congress. I think that perspective is important because a big part of what Congress does is it has the powers to declare war, and it has control over national defense budget. I mean, the national defense is one of the most important and largest parts of what our federal government is supposed to do. And, having a background in that and, granted, a few years ago now, but, I know what it's like to deploy to the Persian Gulf. I know what it's like to leave family at home wondering where I am, when they're going to hear from me again. I was in the Navy before Facebook and Skype and all that, so I got the letters from the helicopter maybe every couple of weeks. So, having that perspective when you're dealing with national security and national defense issues, I think is valuable too. And so, these are all part of who I am and, my very public life. And, the voters are comfortable with me. But that right now what would matter is what the 15 chairs want to do. And if they pick me, I'll be honored and I'll work hard for them to bring our shared values and our shared priorities forward, just like I did in Albany. I would be happy to do that in Washington.
Well, along those lines, I mean, you would go to Washington to represent the district and the issues mm-hmm. that the district is concerned about. Should, whether you support President-elect Trump or not be a prerequisite for the GOP candidate selection at all?
Well, when you represent people, you're running around, you go to events, and you hear their concerns. And there may be slight differences in one county to another. Issues in Warren County are different than they are in Clinton County. Franklin County, very concerned about the northern border and what's happening. Not in everyone's face in Warren, Washington, or even Essex County, but certainly St. Lawrence, Franklin, and Clinton. So you take all these pieces when you're trying to represent somebody. Now, I also know that President Trump won this district by 20%. So most people in this district, I'm not saying all, and I'm not arguing that all should, but the vast majority of people, I mean, he won this district by 20 points. That's, so that tells me a lot. They support his agenda, as do I. I think it's another factor that you bring with you when you go, represent people. It's like, what is the will of the voter? Well, they voted for President Trump, and everyone knew what he was campaigning on, or me, or any other candidates. You put your campaign message out there when you're elected. No one should be surprised when you say, "Hey, I'm going to do what I campaigned to do." So, I think that it is something that people should focus on.
Yeah, but it sure seems like as some of these candidates come forward, like Constantino, mm-hmm. that the balance, of what you're what the county chairs are looking at is awfully skewed.
Well, I think that, look, the county chairs are going to hear from the candidates, and every candidate or would-be candidate is going to pitch what they think is their winning argument. The county chairs are smart people. Most of them have been in and around politics for a while, and they know how to win elections, and they know, you know, how government works, and they're going to weigh these, and they're going to make a decision, you know. So if that's what they're looking for, then that's what they're looking for. You know, I mean, I wouldn't presume to know what the 15 want, but I've been around this a long time, and, you know, like a lot of people, I've talked to the chairs myself. You know, you listen like a conversation that we're having, you know, what's on their mind? What do they think is important? What don't they think is important? You know, and, you know, it'll sift itself out.
So we won't know for a while yet who the candidate might be, if it's you or not.
Probably late January. You know, I would think the last 10 days of January after Inauguration Day, but I would think before Groundhog Day.
Do you have any worries that the potential campaign for New York 21 will distract from work that needs to get done, whether it's you that is the candidate or somebody else who is running?
Well, you don't play the hand you'd have. You play the hand you're dealt. Right? So it is what it is. You know, the timing of this is outside of all of our control now. It's going to happen if the chairs feel like, hey, our best candidate is this member of the state legislature and or this person that's running a business. You know, I mean, everyone's got, you know, their own, you know, other issues going on. So I would imagine that chairs will weigh those factors in, too. You know, the advantage of somebody that's worked in the legislature, knows how to deal with an executive, knows how the differences between a majority and minority, has done public budgets before, has been vetted by the public. That advantage versus, oh, yeah, but he's also going to be busy in Albany. You know, that might be a trade-off that chairs are willing to make. And they may have similar conversations on the other side of the aisle. You know, they may be saying, oh, we're going to look at a candidate that's in the legislature. Is he going to be able to jumble both? You know, I mean, there's a value, but with value might come, you know, the cost. And so in my instance, yeah, you know, I'm pitching this experience, which I think is a valid thing to point out. But at the same token, oh, yeah, you know, I've got a job to do. The nice thing, though, is that my entire Senate district rests within that congressional district. So when I'm out running around doing my Senate job, I'm meeting and talking to voters and to people. And, you know, I mean, it's good policy and it's good politics.
And regardless of the outcome, if you are the candidate and it is a Republican district for the most part, but mm-hmm. should the Democrat win, you would still maintain your Senate seat.
That's correct. That won't happen if I'm the candidate. But what you said is a true statement. It's a fact of law.
It's good to be confident, Dan. Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, you're welcome. My pleasure.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.